Heyo, welcome everyone to Today in the Scene. I'm Joe with Indie Arcade Wave. Here on In the Scene, we dive into the arcade space, from arcade owners and operators and just news in the space in general. I've been with Galactic Battleground for about 5 years. We've been showing it at conventions all over the country, and it is an indie game that we really enjoy showing off. We recently went on a tour to Texas, and we came all the way back up through a whole bunch of different states, and we visited an arcade called Arcade 92. We went to the Flower Mound location. They do have two locations. And I have the owner with me today, Michael. He's going to tell us a little bit about the arcade, how it all started, and, you know, who he is. So how you doing, Michael?
Hey, doing well. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. We've been talking for a minute about getting this to happen, and I'm happy that we were able to. I mentioned beforehand, we spent a lot of time at Arcade 92 playing pinball, super fun. I noticed right when you sat down that your pinballs were different, so I knew you were at the other location.
Yeah.
Stranger Things is one I really love, and I wish I got to play more while we were on the road, but, you know, yeah. We played a lot of pins. So let's just introduce yourself, Michael. Just let us know who you are and what you do.
Yeah, so my name is Michael. I am the... I'm like the owner operator, but also like, you know, the creator of the concept of Arcade 92. So I tend to be more kind of like the visionary for the arcade, and, you know, I curate the games, play a lot of the games. You know, we have a tech crew, but, you know, I do a lot of machine repairs and sometimes some renovations as well. So, you know, right when we got started, like in the early days, you'd see me behind the bar as like a bartender. But, you know, we're past our fourth year now, going into our fifth year for the McKinney location. We just opened Flower Mounds about 3 months ago. So you don't really see me behind the bar anymore. you know, I've got a good crew here that took a while to establish. But yeah, I'm kind of the kind of big visionary guy of Arcade 92.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned your crew, and I think you do have a good crew. I know we got to spend some time with, I believe it was Tyler and Brandon at the Flower Mound location. Played some pinball, played some Galactic Battleground. It was super fun to hang out with those guys and get to know them. Seems like you do have a really solid crew with you. Let's talk about your early video game memories. Like, what is the earliest video game memory that you can think of?
Yeah, for sure. So that's actually part of our, like, you know, story. You know, I'll give you the short version. We have our website, just arcade92.com. It has like the, you know, Arcade 92 story on it, but I'll definitely give you the short version. So it was about when I was about 7 years old was my first interaction with a video game. And that would be kind of 1986-ish era, maybe 1987, somewhere in there. I don't remember exactly when, but, you know, where I played my first video game was actually at a gas station. So I lived in Tulsa, Oklahoma at the time. We had just moved there. My dad relocated because of a job. And we just went to like a gas station. And, you know, he gave me some change and said, hey, go on and grab yourself, you know, a snack. So I went in with a couple quarters. And then I saw at the back of the gas station, there's this big cabinet, which I was like, what is that? I had not seen one of those before. So I went back there, and it was Super Mario Brothers by Nintendo. So I popped a quarter into that sucker. And man, I was like immediately like not just like hooked, but it's like I tend to see a lot of patterns. So like on the drive home, like I was immediately thinking like, man, I know exactly that first dang Goomba got me the first time, right? So I know exactly where they are. I remember exactly where the mushroom is. I know exactly where the star power is. I just absolutely loved it, so I had to get back. Now, what's cool is this gas station was right by our apartment that we had just moved into. So when I got home, it was kind of all I could think about. Like, I really wanted to get back there and play that game again. So I dug through couch cushions. You know, there wasn't much. We had just moved. So I dug through couch cushions, went through the junk drawer, loaded up my pocket full of some quarters that I could find, and then I, at 7 years old, climbed the retaining wall behind our apartment complex, and I rushed across 6-7 lanes of traffic in Tulsa, Oklahoma, basically playing like a real life Frogger, and made it to the gas station. And I kind of, you know, secured funding as I could, just finding quarters. And it wasn't long before my parents figured this out, and they put a stop to it. You know, they were like, "Hey, you're like risking your life to go play that video game." So, you know, my parents were always very supportive. So what's unique about where this kind of dovetails into where why we're even called Arcade 92 is, you know, as you think about it, like I'm 7, almost 8 years old, and I'd never seen a video game before. So what had happened was that time period is the time that we kind of call the quiet era of the arcades. Because from 1979, which is the year when I was born, to 1983 was like the golden age of the arcades. Like that's when like just billions of dollars were being spent. Basically, the United States of America had adopted this video gaming culture from Japan. But by 83, there was the big video game crash, and it was thought to be like a passing fad. So essentially from like 83-ish to 1992, really, that's where our name comes from, that was the silent or the quiet era. So that's why if you played video games in that time, you probably played them at a gas station, at a grocery store. You probably did not play them at an arcade because nearly all the arcades had gone out of business by that time. And again, that's where our name comes from, is Arcade 92. I can go into the specifics, but generally that's when America got its second try, a second shot at the video game culture, and it worked. And that's why we have the multi-billion dollar gaming industry that we have today. It didn't end up being, there was a real possibility that the video game culture would have exclusively stayed as a Japanese thing. But now the United States is right there along. Like that's really the two main countries that have a, you know, gaming or gamer culture. And it's around 92 that the term gamer even started being used. So anyways, that was my first time to play, which again was during a quiet time. But you know, thankfully my parents, again, they were very supportive. So they got me, people were literally throwing their Ataris in the trash can. Like they thought like, this is over. Like we want nothing to do with this anymore. So my dad had a real good friend who was literally throwing his Atari in the trash. And my dad said, hold up, let me give that to my son. So he gave it to me. And I still remember it, man. It's this blue bag, maroon straps on it. I opened that sucker up. There's an Atari in there. There's like 30 games, you know, like Defender, Space Invaders. The games, all the games that I missed, right? Because I was, Space Invaders came out, I was literally 1 month old. you know, Pac-Man. So I got to kind of relive that era that I missed, and have been a gaming nerd ever since. So, yeah.
Yeah, I love that. I think that's a really cool way to find it. I've heard so many stories of people, you know, playing in like the bodega or the YMCA or Kroger's was the most recent one I heard. Like just these random places where you would never think you'd find an arcade game, but they had them. So that's,
we have a game called, it's Off-Road.
Mm-hmm.
Ivan Stewart's Off-Road. And people are like, oh man, I love this game. And I was like, you played this as a grocery store at a grocery store as a kid, didn't you? They'd be like, how'd you know?
Yeah.
Just, and I was like, yeah, I mean, that's where they were. That's where
weird spots, wherever they could, you know, where they could put a game and make a little bit of money is what was happening.
Absolutely. So
we've got the idea of like how you came up with the name and everything. How did you start Arcade 92? Like, where did it go from this idea to actually conceptualizing it into a location and having games there?
Yeah. So I'm going to kind of go into a sad story and then make it kind of a happy story. Right. So this is going to sound wild, but you know, you'd think, oh man, I've been in video games my whole life. That's always been my job, always been my career. And that's not the case at all. So, I was actually a wedding photographer for 20 years. And that was my career. And the thing about wedding photography is it's, you can do it at any age, but man, it's a lot easier when you're 25 than when you're like 40. So I knew there had to be kind of this end game for me. Like I couldn't, There's some people do it, and more power to them, but it's a lot of hard work. It's a lot of agility, crawling on the ground to get perfect angles and stuff. So I knew I had to kind of get out around age 40-ish, and that was just kind of my own somewhat made up benchmark. And at that time, when I was starting to kind of look for something different to do, I was really kind of hustling. I was trying to kind of wrap up that career and save up some retirement money. And I was really kind of hurting myself, you know, mentally, physically, all those things. And around that same time, my father told us, he got the family all together and said he had an aggressive form of cancer, and his time was very limited. So he pulled me aside and he's like, hey, I know it's super cliche, but make time to play, you know, like make time for recreation. He's like, I see you working so hard. He said, again, it's very cliche, but no one says, man, I wish I would have worked more. You know what I mean? So he encouraged me to kind of, you know, have fun, you know, with life. And the time I remember the most is, for me, is that time period when I was, you know, playing Sega Genesis, going to the arcades, the Tilt, playing Super Nintendo and all those things, and the original NES. And I mean, that was what I remember having a lot of fun. So I was like, let's just do that again. I really enjoyed it. So I started collecting like old consoles. I started collecting like my first three games were like Centipede, Mortal Kombat 3, what was the third one? Galaga, of course. So like, you know, those are kind of the games I was like, man, I really remember enjoying those. So the game room in the house, that started getting not enough space. Then the garage was not enough space. And at a point I realized like, this is really good adult therapy. Like this is really great, you know? And now, you know, before I was 13, you know, now I'm 40 and I can have a cocktail while I'm playing. So I wanted to kind of create that to be bigger than just me. Our slogan at the arcade is it's time to play again. So that is inspiration from my dad, you know, and again, we are family friendly here for sure, but we are built every decision, every design, every game I pick is designed to give a nostalgic experience, to someone that's similar in my similar life, you know, stage. But I did want to have it. Like I've got two sons, one just turned 18, and a 14-year-old as well. And, I wanted them to be able to share it. And, you know, you could show them Galaga, you could show them Pac-Man, and they enjoy it. And then about 15, 20 minutes later, they're like, cool, we're kind of done. So I wanted to create Arcade 92 to be a multi-generational gaming experience. So when you get here, you'll find games from 40 years ago, you'll find games from 40 days ago, right? So we do have an esports lounge here as well. It's very unique to us. So, you know, we have, you know, Call of Duty, we've got Fortnite, you know, all the kind of modern games, and combining that with all the retro games as well. So somebody like me can bring their family, bring their kiddos. We've got cocktails at the bar. So, you know, the female gaming industry is increasing so much, but it, you know, when I was growing up, it was 98% guys, right? So we wanted to, we would have wine here, we have cocktails, and right behind me is pinball. Man, the women really seem to enjoy pinball. Wherever we see like a line of women lined up to a game, it's either Miss Pac-Man, Centipede, or pinball. So we just wanted a little bit for everybody. Our goal is, again, a nostalgic experience, but if you don't get that nostalgic feel goods, then maybe we could just show you, like if you're 25, you're not going to have a nostalgic experience, but we can show you a time that you missed. And we can also show you or provide for you modern stuff, like again, Call of Duty or Apex or Fortnite or Rocket League. It's a big one as well. So, but yeah,
I think you guys did an incredibly good job with that, honestly. Like you have, if I'm remembering correctly, you had like four rows at Flower Mound of like retro classic stuff. And then like probably like 12 or 14 pinballs that were all really, really good pinballs. And then you had like Guitar Hero and some driving games that were more recent and like Halo Rogue or what is the Squadron one?
Fire Team Raven.
Yeah. So you had like some current stuff, some old stuff, plenty of space to sit down. You had old consoles. It was a really solid layout. There were different kind of sections for everything, but it all flowed together really, really well. And I'm just curious about the financial freedom that having the bar and having food options brings you guys, because I've talked to a lot of arcade owners that are running just exclusively arcades, and there just isn't as much profit on that end. There's a lot more profit when you bring in the alcohol and you bring in the food to kind of give you freedom to buy games that maybe other places can't get. So what kind of financial freedom has that given you, and how much do you think that has shaped like your wide array of games?
Yeah, I mean, so it does. I mean, it does have, you know, some good profitability to it, of course. But for me, like it was never like not an option, because again, it's like, I wanted to have the perks of being a 40-year-old or perks of being a 30-year-old or whichever, because that's how it was in the garage. Right. So, there's just something to reliving your childhood while having an old fashioned, so, or while having a beer or whichever. So I think even if there was like, but let's just pretend in an alternative universe, there was not a lot of profit in like, you know, alcohol, I would still do it. Right. Just because again, for me, it was like really part of that whole experience. So in Texas, you're required to serve food if you're going to serve alcohol. So there's, you know, if you come to Texas, there's a lot of places that are arcades that have bar they have food, but they may not, sometimes you could tell they didn't put a lot of emphasis on their food. Like they're just trying to meet the minimum requirements of the law. And my kind of idea is like, hey, if we have to offer food, let's try to do really good at it. So, I'm not going to say we rival like a steakhouse or anything like that, but we do get a lot of compliments like, hey, for an arcade, your food's pretty dang good. You would think that's like a, maybe like a veiled insult. But that's not the case, you know, like, again, I'm not gonna, you know, you're not gonna find a rack of lamb here, you know, like, but you know, we've got pizza, we got burgers, we got wings. And we try to do good. You know, we have limited space, very limited space. But we try to do our best to offer, something good to eat. Now, as far as like our bar goes, so obviously we have beer, we have wine, we have ciders, but honestly, one of our unique niches is that we have gaming-inspired cocktails. So we have 21 different cocktails that were inspired like by some game. And my bartenders love it when I do this because I bring them over to a game and I was like, hey, I want you to, let's play this game together and I want you to make it a cocktail based on Centipede, based on Mortal Kombat, based on whatever. And we've got some greats. I've got a great bar manager here. She does an amazing job just literally starting from scratch and creating some amazing, amazing cocktails. Now, as far as like arcade, like more games, like, I don't know if I could say that because I have food and beverage, I now have extra money to buy food and games. Like, again, it was one of those things that in the original model, like it was non-negotiable. So we always are trying to find new games. Like we're always on the hunt. To get at least a couple new titles and swap things out. Now between the two locations, between here in McKinney and in Flower Mound, I could swap out games on a pretty regular basis. But we're always looking for new games. We're always going to auctions, always scouring people who are selling games from their game rooms. And as you see pinballs behind me, we buy a new pinball machine every 3 months, right? Now one has to go to make room for one coming in. So I kind of made that as part of the original design, is that we didn't have to be like, okay, if we have X amount of dollars this month, we can buy a new game. Like it was kind of like rolled in as like a planned budget line to keep new games coming in. And you know, back when I started 5 years ago, you could get a Miss Pac-Man for $500. You know, now it's like $1,200 if you're lucky, if you can find something like that. Galaga is kind of the same way. You know, the average game used to be $500 to $700. You can sometimes find some for, you know, $200. I've got a Guitar Hero here. I bought it for $1,100, and I thought that was crazy. I was like, God, do we really need this game?
That's a good price.
Yeah, and that was 5 years ago. But today, I have not seen in the last 3-4 years, I have not seen one sell for under $5,000. Sometimes they get up to $6,000, even $8,000, which is shocking. So you know, it's tougher to fit it in the budget now. It's. There's a couple of things, like it's part of the experience. But there is also a finite number of games out there, right? That's one of the trick about the retro nostalgic experience, is that book is closed, right? There was X amount of games made, and there won't be more, right? Unless you're playing a modern game. So at some point, you literally just kind of like, okay, we bought everything there ever was. And thankfully, it's a pretty long list, but you end up having to get more and more obscure. You know, people want to play the Pac-Man. They want to play the Galaga. You know, so if you get, hey, I got Snow Bros, be like, cool, never heard of that, right? So it's tricky because you're trying to give people that nostalgic experience, but you're also trying to show them the things that they missed. And that's, again, a great idea from the quiet era. So that 1983-ish to 1990-ish. Would be games that people almost never heard of. So you can kind of balance that. Hey, here's the retro experience, and here's a unique experience of a game that you never heard of before. You'll see a lot of arcades tap into the Japanese game market. So like whatever it is, okay, everyone's got their fill of the games they know about. Let's scour Japan and figure out what games they had. So you'll see a lot of, we have a couple here. We have a couple in Flower Mound as well, of some modern games or some retro games that just never even made it over here to the States. So you'll start seeing that more and more as this model continues to expand and grow in the country.
Yeah, I mean, I think you guys are doing a good job with it, just having, you know, a different selection at every arcade. And I thought your games were in really good shape as well, which is always a huge bonus.
That's tough.
And you said like the new games that are coming out, like the indie games. I noticed that you had a Killer Queen, and we brought in the Galactic Battleground for people to try out. It seemed like Brendan and Tyler really liked it. Let's talk about what you think about the indie games. Obviously, I don't know how much you know about them. There is like 10 or 12 of them out right now that are available for purchase. Yeah. But what do you think about the indie arcade scene, and will you be adding more of those games to your arcades?
So yes is the short version, because again, like I said, the whole retro thing is a finite experience, right? Like there is at some point where, especially if you travel to different arcades, and there's so many in the DFW area, that you're like, okay, I kind of did it all. Like there's a couple like obscure things out there, but if I play them, great. If not, whatever. It is that unique experience, and that's where a lot of your modern indie games are going to come in. So you mentioned Killer Queen, right? So Killer Queen is one of those games where, people come in for the retro experience, but they get to play something like Killer Queen, and it's amazing. And I try to think, so let's go through this possible future happening right now, right? So in 79, 80, 81, you had Space Invaders. Space Invaders didn't know, hey, we're about to start an entire industry, right? They didn't know that, right? When they came out with Pac-Man, like they were like, we didn't know that we're about to create a billion-dollar, multi-billion-dollar idea, right? So we look at like that 79-ish to 83-ish era, and that's generally considered to be the golden age of the arcades, okay? So there was some time before that. Again, that's where you could start getting some kind of obscure games. And if you go back far enough, you know, you got 1972 coming out with Pong. You know, did Pong know that it was going to be like setting this entire subculture of America when it came out with that? Probably not. Somebody was just like, hey, I have a unique idea. Let's take this new idea of these video games, and let's make it to where people have to pay a quarter, just like a kind of like a jukebox, right? So they didn't know. They didn't know that that was going to happen. So fast forward now. So, you know, 1992, people are going to get caught up in the terminology. You know, there's technically the golden age is 79 to 83. The silver age is 91 to 99. And then the bronze age is kind of like basically between Pong and 99, somewhere in there. Most of the games almost nobody's heard of because, again, it was kind of a whole new industry. But in 1992, the best way I can word it is, it was, again, a Japanese company that gave the arcades another shot. It was Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles by Konami. They were like, hey, people are staying at home. They're playing their NES. They're playing their Genesis. How can we get them back into the arcades again? And they created Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, which was a four-player game, right? Like that blew everybody's mind. You could all four at the same exact time cooperatively play at a very popular cartoon and TV show at the time, and eventually a movie, multiple movies now. Then after that, people started getting intrigued by the arcades again. So then Street Fighter II came out in 1991. And the way I could put it is like TMNT was like the bunch of firewood, right? And then in 1991 comes Street Fighter II. That's like a bunch of lighter fluid. And then October 1992, you've got, 1991 was Street Fighter II. Then you got Mortal Kombat comes out in October of 92, and that was the lighting the match, tossing the fire, and now we've had this amazing gaming industry ever since, where the gaming culture is well seeded into the gaming culture. Okay, so here's where I'm going with all that, okay? If Pong kind of started it all, technically, right? And then if there was Space Invaders, Pac-Man, that kind of started that golden age, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Street Fighter II, Mortal Kombat, that started the golden age. What if right now we're in the next golden age of the arcades, right? Who's going to get credit for starting it, right? And that's going to be an indie game. Is it Killer Queen? Is it something else, right? Because like it doesn't necessarily have to be the first, but what 10, 20 years from now, if we are in a new golden age of the arcades, what one or two games is going to get credit? So that's why, yes, we really like bringing in some indie games, some modern games, because today's modern games is tomorrow's retro games, right? So if you're 20 now playing Galactic Battlegrounds, when you're 30, you're going to walk in and be like, holy crap, I remember that game. right? So now you can have a nostalgic experience. I mean, what kind of hurts my heart a little bit is the fact that PlayStation 4 is becoming retro. What? You know, like that's hard to deal with. So, but like I said, today's modern is tomorrow's retro. So who is going to get credit for starting the next wave? So, there you go.
Yeah, I think that's such a good point. Because obviously, like Killer Queen came in and like was really the first indie that published and made the game. But now there's so many more people producing that, you know, maybe a different game catches on or just ends up in more arcades or is more accessible to arcade owners, because the price tag is always the biggest thing, right? You know, it's hard to bring something like that in. But the last question I have is just what you learned from your first location that made it easier to open your second location. Like, what did you really notice when you opened McKinney that you were like, I'm going to do this differently for Flower Mound to make it easier on myself in the future?
So I can actually answer that in two ways, like what we changed, what we did in McKinney, and then what we did in Flower Mound. And the reality is, I would like, here's the oversimplification. You got to be bigger, right? So here in McKinney, we're just a little bit under 5,000 square foot. In Flower Mound, we're right at 7,000 square foot. So you would say, okay, and then there's other arcades like in the DFW area, they're 25,000 square foot. So that's starting to rival things like other, like your more modern arcades, Ticket Redemption kind of places, they're like, you know, 25,000 to 50,000 square foot. So you could say, okay, you know, let's go bigger, right? But the real lesson is that you've got to constantly keep a pulse on what your customers want, what they're looking for. And then, you know, realizing too, like what is your primary goal? Like, you know, if you're trying to create a nostalgic experience, you really don't need a lot of square footage to do that, right? But if you're trying to create a unique experience as well as a nostalgic experience, then you kind of got to have that extra square footage to have both modern and retro games. So, you know, like I said, I could say, hey, well, face value, just go bigger, go bigger, go bigger. But when do you just become like every other modern arcade that's out there? Like, when do you just, you started with something so unique that now you're just white noise. You're just a slightly different version of what already exists. You know, it's like, we're a free play model. You know, you come in, you pay your $12 here, $12.99 in Flower Mound, get your wristband. At what point do you just become so big? You're like, man, I guess we're just going to do card swipes, you know, and now how are you different? So the only answer to that question is, what do the people want? You know, and I have my vision. And there's, as any entrepreneur, you have to balance from what is my vision, but what do the people want? And you kind of got to split that 50-50. If you just always give the people that they want, you've lost your vision. And now what's the point? It's just a job, right? But the other flip side is you're like, no, this is my vision. I will not budge. And then if that's not what they want, then they don't come in. So you're sitting here with your vision perfectly intact and a completely drained bank account. So really, again, the lesson learned is just, it's the same thing when we started McKinney, I went around to arcades across the country just doing some research, and I was like, what is it they're doing right here? What is it they're doing wrong? But again, that's kind of a pompous thing to say, because what you think they're doing wrong may be part of their vision that they're not willing to give up on. Right. So you can say, oh man, that place, all they do is they offer cheap beer. You know, but what if that is their vision? Hey, I want to put a bunch of old arcades and I want to scour the world for the cheapest beer I can find. Right. That may be part of their vision, and that's fine. So, you know, stick to your vision, but also balance that with giving the people what they want. And then, so like, for example, behind me right now is all modern pinball machines. And in my original design, I wanted pinball machines from the 90s. That's what I really wanted. But those suckers just could not handle the abuse. You know, these things were designed to be like $2, you know, when you get three balls. And then when you lose, you got to put another $2, right? That's what they were designed to be like. But we had a Terminator 2 here. We had an Austin Power. And we fixed these suckers about once a week. We were fixing those other 90s games like hourly. Like every few hours, we had a significant repair to do. So that's something that I had to give up on. I had to be like, well, I could give the people what they want, which is pinball machines. but they're broken constantly, you know. So we did have to modernize our pinball fleet just so they could survive the number of people that we have coming in here. So that's a great example of being somewhat flexible on your vision. But the cool thing is I do get to kind of work it out a little bit. You'll see behind me. Oh, wait, the camera's reversed. There we go. Foo Fighters, right? Man, that's 90s. You know, Jurassic Park, that's 90s. Rush, you know, well, Rush also made it to the 90s, but beforehand. And Stranger Things, my goodness, the whole thing is kind of like built on this retro concept. And Godzilla's been around since, like, you know, whatever, 1800s. So it's cool because, you know, I'm still able to hold on to that, you know, 90s theme stuff. But they're modern games. So it's a good compromise. Give the people what they want, but still be able to maintain a vision.
Right. I mean, that's a lot of what we talk about in the indie space is retro inspired, modern designed. So yeah. You have, like, I mean, Galactic Battleground is it's an homage to Asteroids and Galaga. We absolutely love Galaga. We don't stray away from the fact that it's, you know, very much like it, but it's not going to break down on you. You're not going to be fixing the game. It's very simple. It's very easy to play. It's easy for anyone to get into, but, you know, it still has that Galaga feeling. Like, even while we were on tour, we had someone come up to the cabinet and he was like, I remember playing this as a kid. I was like, 5-year-old game, but we totally appreciate you remember playing it as a kid. Yeah. That's really all I had for you, Michael. I really appreciate you coming on. Just before we wrap everything up, just shout out social media so that people can find you and follow along with the journey.
Yeah, so just on Facebook, it's just, you know, at Arcade92 McKinney or at Arcade92 Flower Mound. And then on, you know, Instagram as well, same story, just at Arcade92 Flower Mound, at Arcade92. Flower Mound, whether you're Facebook or Instagram. It is tricky now having two locations. Like, I love it. But yeah, I'm like, ooh, now I have to do everything twice. But of course, there's our website, so just arcade92.com. And then you can select the location that you're interested in. And we do have one YouTube channel that's shared through walkthrough videos. And I do stories on games. For example, we recently just did a story on the story of Donkey Kong. And it's really quite a fascinating story. It's one of those things where, you know, we know Nintendo today because they were told no. they met a lot of resistance here whenever they came to the United States. And because they were told no, it gave them the opportunity to pivot. And part of that pivot was the creation of who we now know as Mario, which is now equally, if not more recognizable than Mickey Mouse. So you get the walkthrough videos there, but also, like, I'm editing a video right now. We just got Jaws Pinball. Love it. Stern has definitely outdone themselves. And I'm doing kind of an instructional video on there. One of the hardest things to do is whenever you're playing pinball is you're like, what the heck am I supposed to be doing? I'm just going to keep hitting the ball towards the blinky lights. And generally that works out, but it's really fun when you know what you're supposed to be aiming for. And as the arcade, we get first dibs, we get games first. So nobody has a Jaws in their game room right now. Right now they will soon. So it's good because these things are 7, 8, 10 grand, sometimes even more. If you're going to make some kind of a big investment purchase on something like that, it'd be nice to know how it's going, you know, at the arcade. So I do like a little walkthrough video on it, and we're going to be posting that here pretty soon. So I'm excited about that one because it's a great pin, really great pin.
I totally agree. I played it. I really liked it. I thought it was cool that you hit the, I think it was the chum bucket, then you like build the chum line, and then the fin comes up. You have to hit the fin. I was like, that's so many different layers, and the fin was cool. I was like, oh shit, how am I going to hit that? Because I'm still pretty new to pinball. I'm not very good at it yet, but it was cool.
I've played a long time, and I'm still terrible. So,
well, again, thank you, Michael, for coming on. I appreciate you telling the story of Arcade 92, telling us a little bit about yourself. Thanks for letting us demo Galactic Battleground. I'm happy to talk to you a little bit more about it as well. But for anybody that's still watching, don't forget to like, share, and subscribe. It helps us a ton. The wave will continue to grow. We can all ride it together. The tabletop version and the Konami version of Galactic Battleground are available for sale right now, as well as the t-shirts for Indie Arcade Wave and Galactic Battleground. But until next time, peace.